The news.
The Israeli regime strikes various locations in Gaza, including in Rafah City. Russia and China have vetoed a U.S. draft resolution at the U.N. Security Council for failing to genuinely call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. And dozens of people have been killed as gunmen attack a concert hall near Russia's capital, Moscow. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Mishahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling claims more lives in the besieged Palestinian territory. At least 10 Palestinians were killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City. A house was struck in the southern city of Rafah, where 8 people, mostly women and children, lost their lives. 3 more were killed in an airstrike in Khan Yunus, also in the south. The Israeli regime began its war on Gaza on October the 7th. Since then, more than 32,000 people have been killed in the Palestinian territory, most of them are women and children. 7,000 people also remain unaccounted for, and almost 74,300 have been injured. Israel has backtracked on a photo collage of the resistance fighters it claims to have captured during a raid on Gaza City's Al-Shifa hospital. The Israeli military admitted that the collage is published, including pictures of several fighters that have not been captured. The Israeli army says 150 Palestinians have been killed and hundreds more arrested during a raid and siege on the Al-Shifa hospital, which is now its 5th day. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas had earlier dismissed Israel's claim of arresting resistance commanders during the raid as psychological warfare. Palestinian resistance fighters and medical staff deny that the hospital is used for military purposes or to shelter fighters. Al-Shifa was Gaza's biggest hospital before the Israeli onslaught. It is now one of the few healthcare facilities that is still operating in the Strip, and it houses tens of thousands of displaced civilians. The Security Council has rejected a U.S. draft resolution which linked a ceasefire in Gaza to the release of captives by Hamas. 11 Security Council members backed the resolution. However, permanent members, Russia and China, as well as rotating member Algeria, voted against, while one country also abstained. Hamas welcomed the rejection of the U.S. draft resolution. It said that the resolution would have given Israel cover and legitimacy for what it called the war of extermination against Palestinians. The Palestinian envoy to the U.N. called the resolution one-sided. Riyad Mansour expressed support for another draft resolution put forward by the elected members of the Security Council that is expected to be voted on soon. Russia and Chinese representatives also said that the U.S. resolution is imbalanced and does not clearly call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Distinguished colleagues, from the very onset, it was clear that the so-called negotiations which our U.S. colleagues have been engaged in on this issue have been focused merely to drag out the time. All of our comments, all of our red lines were time and time disregarded, as were the proposals of a number of other delegations. This was some kind of an empty rhetorical exercise rather than normal work document. The American product is exceedingly politicized, the sole purpose of which is to help to play to the voters, to throw them a bone in the form of some kind of a mention of a ceasefire in Gaza, and to establish the U.S.'s political ambitions in the region through the establishment of terrorist labels, and to ensure the impunity of Israel, whose crimes in the draft are not even assessed. I wish to draw attention to the following. The U.S. draft contains an effective green light for Israel to mount a military operation in Rafah. At the very least, the authors try to make it such that nothing would prevent Western Jerusalem from continuing their brutal cleansing of the south of the Gaza Strip. And what is Washington actually trying to achieve? We have already stated that we will no longer tolerate pointless resolutions which do not contain a call for a ceasefire, which lead us to nowhere. This draft should not pass with the majority of the membership.
Several Israelis have been wounded in a Palestinian retaliatory operation in a settlement near the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. The Palestinian man who carried out the operation was killed by the regime troops. Her correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandel, has more details.
This morning, a Palestinian man arrived near the illegal settlement of Deliv, West Ramallah, and opened fire at Israeli vehicles. They're wounding three Israelis. This is what the Israeli military had said. Then he succeeded to leave the area, Israeli forces, to the mountains, to the nearby mountains. The Israelis tried to arrest him. They didn't succeed. They sent more soldiers and forces to that area, and the exchange of fire continued for over 4 hours. The Israelis then had to use a fighter jet and UAV, according to the Israeli military. And then at the end of the day, after 4 hours and more of exchange of fire, the Israelis succeeded to murder this young Palestinian that later he was identified as Palestinian name is Mujahid Barakat Mansour from the village of Deir Bzia, West Ramallah. He's a father of two, and he was shot and killed. And of course, the Israelis had confiscated his body. Later, the Israeli forces stormed the village of Deir Bzia, and they raided the home of this Palestinian, fighter. And they arrested his wife and his brother, and they caused severe damage inside the home. And at the end of the day, the Israelis left the village of Deir Bzia, but after closing all the roads leading to the village of Deir Bzia, as well as all the roads leading to the villages surrounding the illegal settlement of Deliv.
Iran's foreign minister says the tragedy in Gaza has demonstrated that the world in the issue of human rights, including those pertaining to women and children, is merely a political plaything for the West. In a phone call with the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, said the inhumane nature of the Israeli regime and U.S. support for genocide is also now clear to everyone. The top Iranian diplomat also called for an immediate action by relevant international organizations to stop the genocide in Gaza and provide unrestricted aid to its residents. For his part, Ziad al-Nakala hailed the Iranian support for Palestinian people and the resistance. He described unity among Palestinian resistance groups as key to their success against Israel. The U.S. and the U.K. have conducted new airstrikes on Yemen as tensions remain high in West Asia over the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. Yemen's Al Masira TV said that Washington and London struck several locations across the country, including the suburbs of the capital, Sana'a. The Supreme Political Council of Yemen has condemned the strikes. In a statement, it said the U.S.-led aggression on Yemen violates international law and sovereignty of the Arab country. It added that Yemen will respond in kind to these attacks. Sana'a has also reiterated its support for Palestine as it continues operations against Israel and its allies in the Red Sea. The U.S. and the U.K. launched first airstrikes on Yemen in mid-January for what they called protecting international shipping. Yemen rejects their claim and has retaliated by targeting American and British ships in the Red Sea. And Spain, Ireland, Malta, and Slovenia have announced plans to recognize the state of Palestine as a global solidarity with the Palestinian cause gains momentum. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez made the announcement following a meeting in Brussels with his counterparts from the other three EU countries. Sanchez said the recognition of Palestinian statehood is the only way for lasting peace in the region. He said the recognition will come into effect in Spain within the current 4-year legislative term. The global solidarity movement for Palestine has gained momentum since Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza. More than 130 countries across the world have already recognized the state of Palestine. The worst terror attack in Russia in years. At least 60 people have been killed and 145 wounded in a shooting attack claimed by Daesh terrorist group. The death toll could still rise as dozens of the injured are in serious condition. The attack happened when gunmen in combat figures opened fire and detonated explosives in the major concert hall on the outskirts of Moscow. In a Telegram post, the Daesh terrorist group said gunmen had managed to escape afterwards. Russia's authorities have launched a massive manhunt. The Moscow mayor says that all cultural, sporting, and other mass events would be canceled in the capital for the weekend. The attack is the worst in Russia since 2004 in Beslan School siege, which is more than 330 people, half of them children, were killed. Now to the latest developments in the Russia-Ukraine war. Russia says that it has launched massive airstrikes against Ukraine. Moscow says the strikes are in retaliation for Ukraine's attacks on its border regions over the recent weeks. We have discussed this issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
On this segment of the program, Russia says it has launched a series of massive retaliatory military strikes against Ukraine.
Today, the armed forces of the Russian Federation launched a massive strike with high precision, long-range air, sea, ground-based weapons, and unmanned aerial vehicles against energy facilities, the military-industrial complex, railway junctions, arsenals, places of deployment of Ukrainian armed forces, and foreign mercenaries.
The Russian Defense Ministry said the strikes were in response to Ukrainian shelling of Russian border regions and attempts to break through and seize settlements over recent weeks. It stressed that all goals of the strike had been achieved. The ministry said those included destroying military equipment delivered to Ukraine from NATO countries and disrupting the transfer of reserve forces to the front line. Kiev says 5 people were killed and 14 injured in the largest Russian aerial attack to target it in recent months. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Chair of UN Affairs of Ukrainian World Congress, Mr. Andrei Dobryansky, joining us from New York. Also, we have former CIA analyst Larry Johnson joining us from Bradenton, Florida. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Dobryansky in New York. Sir, give us your perspective and breakdown of the recent events as you see it.
Well, just to counter the statements being made by Moscow, many of the facilities that were hit were civilian. There was no retaliation because if you're aiming a missile at a trolley, hospitals, other civilian locations, as well as the largest hydroelectric plant following the destruction of the Kakhovka plant last summer, clearly these are civilian targets, yet another a number of items that will be added to the war crimes case against Russia at the ICJ. So that's the factual method. What's happening in Russia, however, is primarily being done by Russian citizens against the Russian government. And we just got a report today that the largest donations for Ukraine's drone army came from Russia during the period of the Russian election. So there are actually Russians who are sending aid to Ukraine to help liberate their own country.
Mr. Larry Johnson, I want to get your assessment as well, and also if you may respond to Mr. Dobryansky in New York.
What he's saying are lies, complete utter lies. Where's the video? Show us the videotape out of Kiev of all of the civilian areas hit. You can't, because that's not what happened. In contrast, though, the ample video evidence of the Ukrainians sending missiles into Belgorod and drones into Belgorod hitting purely civilian targets. The fact of the matter is there are a significant number of Western mercenaries. Ukraine's being kept alive because of a flow of NATO weapons, and Russia is appropriately hitting and targeting those areas. Throughout, you know, if Russia was really hitting civilian targets, you would see the images coming out of the Lviv area, out of the base at Yavoriv, but they're not showing that. And you know, Ukraine continues to lie about, oh, we shot down most of the missiles coming in. No, they didn't. Because if they did, they wouldn't be complaining about, oh, the Russians have hit all these civilian areas. The reality is this. Ukraine's losing. It has lost the war. It's a dead man walking. It just doesn't want to acknowledge that fact.
All right, that's all the time we have for this segment of the program. Allow me to thank my guests, Mr. Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst, joining us from Bradenton, Florida. And thanks to Mr. Andrei Dobryansky, Chair of UN Affairs, Ukrainian World Congress, joining us from New York. And that's a wrap for this edition of the News Review.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Congratulations to everyone. Congratulations to everyone.
Alongside Iranians in Nowruz. In the name of God, Salam everybody, welcome to the program. Today is the third day of Nowruz holidays. Congratulations on this ancient Iranian feast. As we said yesterday, today we will speak about the customs of different ethnicities in Iran in Nowruz. Today we will speak about the customs of people during Nowruz in the beautiful Gilan province in north of Iran and southwest of the Caspian Sea. Stay with us, please. Thank you. The people of Gilan province have a very ancient record among the Iranian ethnicities. They live in the southwest of the Caspian Sea, a very lush and beautiful region. They are very hardworking and joyful. However, there are other ethnic groups in Gilan, such as Taleshi and even Azeri Turks. A man or woman from Gilan is usually called Gilak. Among the ceremonies and customs of Nowruz in Gilan, mention can be made of Nowruz Khani. Men sing songs while playing musical instruments and go from door to door. Sometimes, women accompany them in colorful dresses and give the good tidings of arrival of a spring. The theme of most of the poems that Gilak and Taleshi people sing in Nowruz Khani are about praise of God and the Prophet and his progeny. These poems also describe spring. The poems continue with venerating the host in front of every house, and host gives them presents and sweets. Dichin Vachin is another prevalent custom in Gilan province to welcome spring. Dichin Vachin is the same as Khune Tekuni, meaning house cleaning, which we have already spoken about. Houses in the villages of Gilan are mostly thatched. Women clean the house and prepare clay in the last month of year. Then, they adorn the walls with colorful clay and straw. Moreover, they throw away broken and old jars. They paint fences and banisters. In short, people, especially villagers of Gilan, try to renew everything to welcome spring. Arus Gola or Arus Goli is a dramatic custom in Gilan before the arrival of spring. It is a show in which a giant, a man called Pir Babo, meaning old father, and Naz Khanum are the main actors. Pir Babo is a man with the makeup of an old man. Giant is played by a man with a cap from rice straws. Naz Khanum is also a woman whose role is played by a youth wearing female attire. The theme of the show is the squabble between the giant and Pir Babo on Naz Khanum. The squabble leads to wrestling of the two. The giant is the symbol of darkness and winter, while Pir Babo symbolizes a gardener who bestows Arus Gol, beautiful bride, to people and nature. The giant wins the contest and leaves the scene with Naz Khanum. Haft Sin tablecloth is prepared by people in Gilan province like other parts of the country. In the brink of the turn of the year, they hang boxwood trees on the door and rooms and spread the beautiful Haft Sin tablecloth to welcome spring. Women in Gilan put the 7 items of this tablecloth and also put a burning light in it, wishing a luminous and bright year. It should be mentioned here that the provincial capital, Rasht, was dubbed as the creative food city by UNESCO in 2015. UNESCO, in a report, says, throughout generations, Rashti cuisine has not only carried on ancient recipes, but also unique cooking utensils and methods. Dear listeners, with presentation of more than 230 foods, including appetizers, main foods, desserts, caused the UNESCO to pick Rasht as the creative food city among 34 cities globally. The city has one of the biggest variety of Nowruz foods. Some of the famous foods of Gilan are کله کباب، کپور، آبه، باقالا قاتق، میرزا قاسمی، ترشی تره، سیر قلیه، کباب ترش، انار بیج، واویشکا، شیشنداز، گاماج کبابن، ماهی، فیبیج. Dear friends, as you may know, egg is an essential item in Haftsin tablecloth. But it is interesting to know that old families in Gilan give an egg to anyone who pays a visit to them during Nowruz. People in Gilan paint eggs with natural substances. They used to put onion leaves and leaves of other plants or peels of dried fruits like walnut and pomegranate in a pot. Then water was added and the pot was put on fire. After some minutes, the eggs would become colorful. Egg is called morgane in Gilaki language. After the turn of year, children who have got eggs as AD, that is Nowruz gift, gather together outdoors and call for rivals. The fight begins with two contenders. Before starting the game, they hit the eggs to their teeth to make sure that they are hard enough. The contenders stand opposite one another. One starts as aggressor to strike a blow while the other defends. Then the defender holds the egg in his fist in a way that only the tip can be seen. Now the aggressor hits the egg with his own egg in a gentle blow. Anyone whose eggshell is broken will be the loser and should give the egg to the winner. In the past, during the first days of spring, this fight used to be crowded and exciting with spectators around. Sometimes a winner would gather many eggs and eat them in the end with his friends and others. Well, that marks the end of this episode. Tomorrow, we will continue with the Nowruz customs of Kurdish people in the west of Iran. Thank you for staying with us.
Iranian weapon. Part 4.
Kuwait was the main financier of Saddam's war against Iran, but Saddam miscalculated. Kuwait was not like Iran for the United States and the West to remain silent in the face of an attack on Kuwait. The U.S. president immediately reacted.
United States and its coalition allies are committed to enforcing the United Nations resolutions that call for Saddam Hussein to immediately and unconditionally leave Kuwait. In view of the Soviet initiative, which, very frankly, we appreciate, we want to set forth this morning the specific criteria that will ensure Saddam Hussein complies with the United Nations mandate.
These were the moments when a limited war broke out between the U.S. and Iraq over Kuwait, which ultimately led to complete sanctions on Iraq. To the extent that Saddam was forced to destroy all his missiles and declare the location of all his defense facilities to the West. Saddam implemented all the tasks that the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, dictated to him and didn't even know that the new U.S. president was going to attack him without getting a U.N. approval.
Involve Saddam Hussein.
This president is the son of the president who had attacked Iraq in the past. The Mersad air system is the result of the trust. Mersad means ambush. The Iranian ambush is an example of the reverse engineering of the American Hawk. The first step to conquer the sky step by step. This is 2010. The Mersads launched their missiles one after the other. The missiles are called Shaheen and are domestically produced by Iran. The missile control room is also domestically produced. This is an important secret. This room is the big secret of Iranians. Without having information about it, it's impossible for the enemy to easily disable it. The position of the Islamic Republic is standing against any aggression and humiliation. Delay in delivery of the S-300 prompts Iran to start developing a similar air defense system. It's a bold claim, but Iran has previously reverse-engineered American systems, so it isn't unlikely to reach this one as well. Meanwhile, the project to design an Iranian S-300 system had started, and on the other hand, the complaint against the Russians had yielded good results, and the first convoy of S-300s was arriving in Iran. But the odds are against the former absolute power in the sky. This is the Northrop Grumman Corporation, the manufacturer of the billion-dollar Phantom aircraft. They built the X-47 to compete with the RQ, and now they are assembling the highest flying American spy aircraft. Pakistanis also love the UAV, but Iran will soon disrupt the game for this factory as it turned the tables on the RQ manufacturer. Global Hawk. It is an eye that looks at the ground from about twice the height of other types of aircraft with pinpoint accuracy. Maybe we could say that the most important part of this drone is a SAR radar. SAR scans the surface of Earth. Global Hawk can scan 7 million square meters in a single day. But on June 20th, 2019, for the United States, some developments are underway. This is the American base in the United Arab Emirates. The Global Hawk is to take off. The destination is Iran. The Global Hawk has turned off all of its detection systems and is untraceable. The American Hawk can be seen on the Iranian radar from the moment it takes off. It is getting closer and closer to Iran every moment. So much so that it reaches around the Mubarak mountain area. It is in the crosshairs of this system now. The Khordad-3 radar and missile launcher, a system that the Americans saw a few days ago on the Shahid COSG vessel, but they do not know that the very system is going to surprise them tonight. From this moment, this name,
4.3 will be scary for all American aircraft. The defense system of 4.3. Sometimes after the explosion, the damaged body of Global Hawk is taken out of the water. This wreckage will be placed on display for people and officials to see. In the release pictures of the remains of the drone, one of the images attract most of the attention. The picture is an image of the SAR radar, the most important part of the Global Hawk. Iran has achieved this technology at its highest level. 3 years before this event, Absar radar had been unveiled here on Kish Island in Iran. But possessing American radar can make the Iranians fully aware of their opponent and the American technology. American SAR can work even in the most stormy of weather. Now, Iran is the only country that has this radar. The radar that begins its work here at the hands of the Army Chief is the radar that detected the Global Hawk. This radar is called Samin. Those days, Iran was building two other important radars as well, Miraj and Nazir. This is Nazir, which stands on the highest peak in the east of the country. Nazir is used like a radar net against the smallest drones. This radar system is Nazir's brother, Muraghib. It watches over the Persian Gulf. The S-band is an important feature in radar design. It works so reliably that the United States uses this band to communicate with its satellites and space shuttle. Muraghib and Nazir have another brother named the Persian Gulf. This radar is specially made for radar evasive aircraft. On the other hand, the Iranian Army has designed an important system which is similar to the S-300, but much more efficient. Bavar 373 missile. Bavar uses Iranian-made Sayyad missiles and destroys six targets at the same time. Bavar shoots vertically. It shoots from a canister, which means it has outmatched the S-300. Bavar's radar detects all aircraft, even the strategic and very expensive American F-35. Bavar can hide among terrain features. Its mast opens and closes quickly and can change its position very quickly. Its missile is called the Sayyad 4, which is completely Iranian. This is the same missile that was first made through reverse engineering of the Americans' missiles, and now it is so advanced it can detect and hit the American F-35. This is the power of a country that 30 years ago announced its need to have a defense system to the world and was sanctioned by all powers and allies. A colossal monster emerges from behind the clouds, embodying Iran's ambitious vision. This radar is known as Sipir. The range of the radar is 3,000 kilometers. That is, if an aircraft takes off from Israeli-occupied territories, it will be monitored in Tehran. Intercepting Israeli aircraft is not good news for the regime. Israel's small army used to rely on surprise attack as a principle previously. On the other hand, Iran's allies have been equipped with air defense systems for years. One of them is Hezbollah. Lebanon does not have any air defense system. Hezbollah surprised everyone by purchasing the SAM-22 system. This system has already been seen in the Egyptian army and works very well to deal with fighters and helicopters in areas like Lebanon. It means that Iran's air defense power is no longer limited to its borders. Iran is the defense eye of all axes of resistance. Today, Iran has turned out to be an active pole of drone power in the region and across the world. It can send long-range pinpoint missiles and drones for specific purposes beyond its borders. It can also monitor, control, and guide the missiles and drones through its most advanced radar and defense systems.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, learning from Ramadan, but living Ramadan in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here at your service. Dear listeners, we are humbly talking about living Ramadan and experiencing Ramadan in our Islamic lifestyle. So, some time has already passed in the holy month of Ramadan, and alhamdulillah, we are feeling the benefits and the advantages of the holy month of Ramadan. Yes, it is difficult, but the rewards and the benefits for every single one of us are really unimaginable. You know, we talked about in one of our previous programs how one of the most fundamental benefits of the holy month of Ramadan is this connection that we establish with the Almighty Allah. And, you know, we said how this connection that we establish with the Almighty Allah is something which brings us relaxation and peace of mind, and it reduces our stress and our depression, and you can look back at that episode to know more. But so we have all these different benefits that we are receiving in the holy month of Ramadan, right? We are trying our best to eat healthier. We are trying our best to live healthier. Or if we want to put it in other terms, we are trying to eat, in accordance with a Islamic lifestyle. We are trying to live in accordance to a Islamic lifestyle because, you know, in reality, the holy month of Ramadan is exactly that. It is this refresher when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. It's like the holy month of Ramadan teaches us, once again, every single year, what an Islamic lifestyle truly is, so that we can live that Ramadan and we can experience that holy month of Ramadan.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin-nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about living the holy month of Ramadan. We are talking about living a Islamic lifestyle. This is something that we really need to take into consideration. We need to realize, we need to understand fundamentally, you know, that the holy month of Ramadan is here to help us. The holy month of Ramadan is here to purify us. The holy month of Ramadan is here to help us connect with the Almighty Allah. You know, we live a life that is so busy and we're running all the time and we're doing so many things and there's a lot of stress and there's a lot of anxiety and people are depressed and people are sad. And in this kind of an environment where you live like this the whole year, because of the materialistic and very Western culture that, you know, has been placed upon humanity and is dominating everywhere, unfortunately, we have a tendency to forget this Islamic lifestyle. And so this holy month of Ramadan, the things that we are learning, the Islamic lifestyle that we are learning to live once again, is something that should not stay in the holy month of Ramadan. It should continue through the rest of the year. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib, Ramadan.
Midstream.
Palestinian resistance Hamas responded on Friday, March 15, to the Paris 2 proposal with a phased agreement that emphasized the cessation of aggression on the Gaza Strip, with withdrawal of the Israeli occupation army and the commencement of relief operations. However, the Israeli entity authorities are focusing on the issue of their captives to circumvent ending the aggression file. In the details, Hamas's proposed document includes a temporary ceasefire lasting 42 days in the first stage and transitioning to a permanent ceasefire in the second stage. In the first stage, the Palestinian resistance Hamas demands the withdrawal of Israeli forces from specific areas and offers to release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for Israeli entity captive soldiers. The second stage requires a permanent ceasefire before any further prisoner exchanges. The proposal also involves launching a comprehensive reconstruction process for Gaza and ending the blockade. Hamas spokesperson Osama Hamdan affirmed in a press conference that the occupation is trying to shift the focus to the issue of captives to circumvent ending this aggression, considering the paper presented by the movement as realistic and highly flexible. Hamdan emphasized the prisoner exchange must take place, but not at the expense of fundamental issues, foremost of which is stopping the aggression. In contrast, the office of the Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu described Hamas's proposal as unrealistic, but announced that a delegation would head to Qatar to discuss a potential agreement. In the same statement, Netanyahu's office added that the latter approved plans for the military operation in the city of Rafah, noting that the army is preparing for operational matters and for the evacuation of civilian populations. As for the Americans, they quickly seized upon Hamas's response, coming out to express their optimism, albeit cautiously. However, what stood out in their remarks is that they considered Hamas's proposal to be definitely within the framework of the deal we have been working on in recent months. This is according to a statement made by the National Security Council coordinator at the White House, John Kirby, on Friday, March 15. Kirby expressed hope that ceasefire talks in Gaza are moving in the right direction, adding, "We are closely involved in negotiations in Doha and believe that progress can be made. There is a new round involving other parties." At a time when Israeli entity reservations were clearly evident regarding the resistance imposing conditions concerning Palestinian prisoners to be released. On the other hand, what Cairo directly conveyed to its panelists is that the success of this deal will be linked to the seriousness of the parties in implementing it, and that what will be agreed upon in Doha must be binding, and it is not logical for there to be a resumption of fighting. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Mala Osman. As the Israeli entity War Cabinet and the Ministerial Committee for Security Affairs were briefed on Friday on the Palestinian resistance, Hamas's response regarding the anticipated ceasefire and the prisoner exchange deal between the two sides, new details have emerged after lengthy negotiations mediated by Egypt, Qatar, and the United States of America. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Mohammed Al-Haj Moussa, spokesperson of the Islamic Jihad Palestinian Resistance. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Mohammed. Now, Hamas responded on Friday, March 15, to the Paris 2 proposal with an agreement that prioritizes ending the genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, withdrawing of the Israeli occupation forces, and initiating relief efforts. However, the Israeli entity authorities are focusing on the issue of their own settler captives, especially the soldier ones, to avoid addressing the complete cessation of aggression on the Palestinian Gaza Strip. How do you see the talks moving on from this point?
Peace be upon you all. Greetings to you and to our brave, steadfast people under the Zionist killing machine. We affirm that this Zionist entity, which has not achieved any goals on the ground due to the steadfastness of the resistance, the resilience of the Palestinian people, and the steadfastness of the resistance men in various support arenas, is now embarrassed and knows that the end of the war means its inevitable loss in the battle. Any war and any battle are determined by achieving political objectives, not by the ability to destroy, wreak havoc, kill, and commit genocide as the criminal occupation does. This occupation believes that ending the war under the current reality with the presence and steadfastness of the resistance is a crushing defeat for it, as it does not want to end the war but wants to emerge victorious. Therefore, by continuing this war, it tries to achieve any of its military objectives and wants to release its prisoners unconditionally and complete its aggression. Naturally, as resistance, we will not allow that. Our Palestinian people have made many sacrifices, and we are steadfast in the field until the occupation is forced to agree to our conditions in recognition of our sacrifices and the sacrifices of our people. All the conditions we, as resistance, have set, we have shown very high flexibility with the mediators and dealt positively with the principle of lifting this injustice from our people, not because we are weak. On the contrary, thank God we are present in every confrontation arena in every inch of Gaza, and we will continue until this occupation knows that it must agree to our conditions. Part of the pressure exerted by the occupation is media pressure, and we have shown high flexibility for negotiations and that we are ready to discuss this issue.
Well, Mr. Mohammed, the office of the Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu labeled the proposal coming from the Palestinian resistance as an unrealistic proposal. They didn't like it, but they declared that they will send a team to the Qatari capital, Doha, to explore the possibility of an accord. The Netanyahu administration but then said that it has approved a plan to actually invade Rafah. Do you think this is part of the negotiation bluffing tactic by the Zionist team, or will Zionist Israel actually outdo itself in its own genocidal warfare and genocidal behavior and try and actually attempt to invade Rafah, which is packed right now with 2 million displaced Palestinians.
Exactly what you said. This is part of the continuous Zionist lies and deception since the beginning of this aggression. And before that, throughout this aggression, they lie and try to mislead public opinion. It is very clear that there is a contradiction in the occupation because it realizes that it is now forced to provide answers after its failure in the field since the beginning of the war until today, and after the images of massacres and genocide that come out of a strip over time. The world today no longer hears and sees with Israeli entity and American eyes. The world now realizes the facts thanks to the steadfastness of the Palestinian people and what Palestinians show over time in images that confirm the massacres of this occupation. Therefore, some governments demand that the Zionists to reduce the state of killing because they have achieved nothing yet. Now the occupation constantly threatens to go to Rafah and commit massacres while saying that it is also continuing the political process at the same time. How is that possible? This threat comes within the framework of the same negotiations. It threatens to have bargaining chips, thinking that by doing so it can pressure us in the resistance and push us to retreat and submit to its conditions. The fundamental dilemma here is that it blackmails us into postponing the military operation in Rafah, not stopping the aggression. Therefore, this is something we will not allow in the resistance. In our opinion, agreeing to any of these issues means leaving our people to this occupation to continue its killing and achieve its dream of displacement. So if the resistance agrees to any conditions without the basic points, this means accepting a siege harsher than it has been for 17 years. And this means that we are facing a more difficult reality as Palestinians. We are in a stage that requires steadfastness and resilience. What is happening in the Strip is painful and very difficult humanely, but we as resistance remain steadfast in the field. All our military units are still operating in the field, and we will not allow the occupation and the Americans to snatch from our hands the paper of the prisoners' release, only for them to return to killing and extermination.
Mr. Muhammad, this is what I want to talk to you about with the last 2 minutes that we have. The comments that we heard from John Kirby, who is the White House coordinator for the National Security Council, said that the proposal by the resistance in Palestine actually falls within the framework that the U.S. is trying to portray to end the aggression on Gaza. I find personally that a bit hard to believe, since the U.S. has been evidently found to be complicit in the genocide against our Palestinian brothers and sisters. So why are they suddenly so optimistic now?
In my opinion, the United States is not optimistic because when it announced that what Hamas and the Palestinian resistance presented comes within the framework of the Paris paper negotiations, they want by this statement to pressure Netanyahu as part of the soft pressure between Biden and Netanyahu due to their difference in tactics. They are certainly in agreement at the strategic level, but at the tactical level, the U.S. administration has emphasized that Netanyahu is currently stuck in the Gaza quagmire, and that continuing the war as it is means that this entity will be in real danger in the coming days due to the steadfastness of the Palestinian people, the resistance, and the efforts of both brothers in all support arenas until the conditions of resistance are achieved. What the United States wants is a tactical change in the war. As for Netanyahu, he is exploring new objectives to prolong this war. But Biden realizes through all the reports from the Zionist field, like Eisenkot, Gantz, and others, that the occupation army cannot achieve Netanyahu's illusions. This has caused some problems at the tactical level. In our opinion, the U.S. administration is not a partner in this war, but rather is managing this war since Biden came and chaired the Zionist War Council. But it seems that Netanyahu has gone beyond the boundaries drawn for him and aspires to achieve more objectives. However, the United States knows that the resistance in Gaza remains alive, present, accepted, and supported by the Palestinian people. Biden wants this extermination, but he supports it with a soft extermination, without sound and image, and stopping it would end the state of global discontent that has reached the streets of the West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Muhammad Al-Haj Musa, spokesperson of the Islamic Jihad Palestinian Resistance, for your time and effort to be on our show to discuss what the proposal of the resistance is and what to expect from the upcoming talks in Qatar. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned, because next we are going to talk about a very rare meeting that took place between Palestinian resistance factions and the Yemeni Ansarullah resistance.